Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
Welcome aboard the Absolution Network, as you are joining us for the golden first episode of Tom's Prerogative. Hello there, my fellow space explorers. I am, of course, your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And again, I welcome you aboard this trip of the Absolution Network. Sarah has told me that everything is golden to go. And this is our first episode. I'm very excited to finally get this off the ground. I took a week to watch the first series that we'd be reviewing. That series being Voltron Defenders of the Universe. Now, I picked Voltron Defenders of the Universe, in particular the first season, as it is on Hulu, which is the first 30 episodes, being that one of the first shows to be on Toonami was Voltron. And to be quite honest, it was easier to watch a season of Voltron than it is Thundercats. Though it's probably for the best, I'd rather leave Thundercats for a later date so I can then maybe do a comparison between the old and new, since, let's all be honest, the Thundercats have a much better new show than the new Voltron Force. And considering I liked Voltron better than Thundercats back in the day, that's saying something. But with that being said, let's get on to my prerogative on Voltron, Defenders of the Universe.
From days of long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend. The legend of Voltron, defender of the universe. A mighty robot, loved by good, feared by evil. As Voltron's legend grew, peace settled across the galaxy. On planet Earth, a galaxy alliance was formed. Together with the good planets of the solar system, they maintained peace throughout the universe. Until a new horrible menace threatened the galaxy. Voltron was needed once more. This is the story of the super force of space explorers. Specially trained and sent by the Alliance to bring back Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
So, as we move on, let's first count down our voice acting cast for Voltron, Defender of the Universe. Voicing Commander Keith and Pidge, we have Neil Ross. Voicing Lance and Sev, or Seven, it's a Norwegian name, so I apologize. If you think I'm bad with Norwegian names, you should hear me with Japanese names. Go to Tokyo SOS for that one. But Seven, Michael Bell. Princess Alora, Witch Haggard, and Nanny, and pretty much any other significant female voice in this series, is done by B.G. Ward. Or excuse me, B.J. Ward. I said B.G., thinking of someone else. B.J. Ward. Honk and Lotor by Lenny Widrib. And I Ween Rib. I'm horrible with names. Just get used to it. I was practicing that name for an hour. Trust me. Can't get it right now. I'm not going to get it right. Koran, King Alfar, and the narrator by the legendary Peter Cullen. Yes, that's Optimus Prime. And also, as I think we can all say, as I'll get to in a bit, the voice of Toonami. And King Zarkon and Commander Yorick by the legendary Jack Angel. And I think anybody who knows animation any bit knows that that list is pretty much a who's who's of the superstars of voice acting in the 70s and 80s right there. So pretty much the Voltron Defenders universe follows five space explorers, or it starts out with five space explorers who have been sent by the Galactic Garrison or Galactic Alliance. Some have it the Garrison, some have the Alliance. Basically, they've been sent by them to find Voltron and rise him up from the ashes to fight against King Zarkon. And it basically follows these space explorers as they pilot Voltron and fight against King Zarkon on planet Aurora. With that being said, for those who may have not heard one of my podcasts before, you know, one of the reasons I put the retro reviews, when you see kind of how I do things, and I do have a bit of a structure to how I go about reviewing. I have different categories, music, art, and story, and acting, and I'm going to go through each and all of them. And let's start off with music. And we're going to start off, the first talking point I have with music is the intro and the outro thing, which, again, Voltron, one of those legendary 80 cartoons, sold a lot of toys, and a big part of a very successful cartoon, or animation, shall I say, is you have to have a good intro theme. You have to have a good intro and outro theme, but especially a good intro theme. And this is where, you know, I'm leaving the voice acting for later to talk about when we get to acting, but this is a good place to talk about the narrator, which is Peter Cullen, and pretty much the narrator. There are a few places throughout the series that narrator comes and talks. The one episode that comes to mind where you heard the narrator outside the intro was remember the name of the episode, but basically it's where these Broach Petals fell from space and everybody got sick and Lance had to go to another planet to get a medicine. But for the most part, you only heard the narrator in the intro, as you heard when I played the intro a couple minutes ago. That is really a legendary intro, and part of what makes that intro so good is Peter Cullen. He has a grandeur to his voice, which I think is obvious to a lot of people. I mean, again, this is Optimus Prime, and all you need to do is listen to the last sentence of the last line that Optimus Prime says at the end of the first Transformer movies to understand exactly what I'm talking about, or watch this intro. It's just that there is a grandeur, an epicness, as you will, which it's a weird way of saying it, but just that, you know, you feel like you're coming to watch a grand adventure when you hear him. More important, the intro actually serves a very interesting story aspect in the fact that it gives you the backstory of the space explorers. Anybody can jump onto any episode and they automatically know the backstory of the space explorers because, you know, they tell you it right there and then that, you know, long time ago, there was Voltron, the defender of the universe, who defeated evil, and he brought peace to the universe. So much peace that the planets and Earth, with a lot of other planets, formed a Galactic Alliance. But then evil came back, and they needed to rise Voltron again. So they sent these space explorers who had been trained to find him and bring Voltron back to defeat the evil. Right there, you have the entire backstory of who Keith and Pidge and Lance and Seven and Honk are. They're from the Galactic Alliance. They're space explorers. They have been trained how to fight, how to fly, how to pretty much be able to pilot Voltron. And so it tells you that backstory, and it's very, very unique for Voltron. You know, I really can't think of any animation off the top of my head that I can point to and says, like, oh, it tells you the entire backstory, that, or at least the important backstory that you need to know in the intro. Now, of course, I'm talking mostly about, you know, the narration there, which leaves out pretty much, which is well known as the Voltron theme, which is pretty much also part of the outro theme for all intents and purposes. And it, let's face it, there is pretty much very few themes that are more classic than the Voltron theme. There's a grandeur to the theme. You know, I'm trying, you know, da 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 da. Which, by the way, for some reason, I always, for some reason, confuse it with the Indiana Jones themes. Sometimes I'll be trying to hum the theme, and which may be the one criticism I have, but I mean, does anybody else, you know, sometimes confuse it with a certain, you can't confuse it with the Indiana Jones theme, but like, if you're humming it, you know, if you've ever tried to hum something, and you're trying to hum one theme, and it goes into another, that's basically what I'm talking about, but you know, besides that, I mean, the theme is just absolutely excellent. It does exactly the same thing that the narration does, which is bring you this sense of grandeur that this series is. You know, you are coming for an adventure. You know you're going to get an adventure when you watch the series just based off the theme. And so you expect great things from watching. And that's what an intro is supposed to do. It's supposed to get you hyped. That's what an intro is supposed to do. I've said it before. I've said it many times on. That is what an intro is supposed to do, which is get you hyped for the series. From there, I think we'll move on to talking about the music in the series. And there's very many memorable themes throughout the series, from King Zarkon's, which is a very dark and gloomy theme, you know, which is, you know, I mean, some people might say that, oh, well, these themes are obvious for who they are, you know, for Castle Doom and whatever they're with King Zarkon, it's that dark and gloomy theme, darn, darn, darn. That's my, I mean, a little. You know, you have a more light and joyful theme when you're on planet or Eris, and, you know, with Princess Allura, you know, when they're all playing around, you know, pretty much the Voltron theme plays when the robots are fighting, and, you know, more importantly, when they form Voltron. You know, I mean, there's not a lot of themes and, you know, music in the series, but pretty much most of it is very memorable. And that's because they keep it simple, which I think works for the series very much. You know, I think if they try to do a complicated composition for the series, it wouldn't have worked. I don't think this is a series, considering how this series was made, which I think does bring the point that we have to talk about right now, which is, this is not a series that was, it was specifically created for this. This was World Event taking basically what was a Japanese anime called Go Lion, though originally they, for those who know the story, they actually wanted another one, but they told Toho, we want the series with the lions, and they sent them Go Lion by mistake, but they ended up liking it better, which is the basic story behind it. But, you know, basically they took footage from this series called Go Lion and made it into Voltron, as in they basically cut and pieces together, which I will, you know, it's very funny to, there's a scene at the end of an episode that was taken and cut, and put in four different episodes and the same scene. And the part that gets me is that one of these happens, right? Like, there's one episode where they obviously cut and pasted from that previous episode that was a couple episodes back. And in the very next episode, they have that same ending. Which, by the way, for those who want to know what the ending is, it's Princess Laura kissing Lance, him doing a little dance, Pitt saying, "I want to kiss," and the mice coming down and giving him four pecks, and him thinking, "Oh, Princess Laura kissed me." It's like, I guess when you're watching it one episode a day, you may not notice it, but for me, who's like watching this in a marathon run, it's like, didn't I just see this scene like 30 minutes ago? It's, again, because of the reason what they're doing with the series, but to bring this all back to music, you know, again, not a lot of scores for the series, but they all work to do their purpose. Again, this is a grand adventure, you know, giant robot anime, but, you know, it is this grand adventure, it is this group of space explorers who are fighting against evil, and you want to have sort of a score that is very simple to fit with what the series was trying to do. I mean, again, remember, this was targeting kids. You know, I think we do have to put that in context. With that, let's move on to art. With the design of Voltron, you know, again, a design that's become very iconic in animation history. I think anybody can know the ask, well, what does Voltron look like? And they could pretty much, I mean, if they know animation at all, they could probably tell you. But I think part of the reason it works is that you have the all-black torso, which I think works to balance out sort of the colors on the arms and legs. I mean, there's a basis for the body, and then there's, you know, the colors of the legs, which are the different lions. The black lion, of course, being the leader, has a much more, you know, I don't want to say buff, but bolder look to it that I very much like that works for the series. I think what works is because it's very simple. You know, you look at other mech designs and, you know, for instance, look at the vehicle Voltron that was basically, you know, the second Voltron, which would come after, you know, 59 episodes of Voltron, which was two seasons. You know, part of the reason people didn't like that was, you know, whereas with the Lion Voltron, you had basically five pieces that formed together. And the design was very simple, you know, very basic color scheme. The vehicle was just all sort of different colors and, you know, different things and stood out from each other. And that's part of the reason why the Lion Voltron works so much better than the vehicle one. You know, again, you have that basic, I keep coming back to it, but that basic color scheme that, it is something going into character design, again, not matching, which is very unique in that sense, in the fact that they don't match sort of the colors. You know, considering that this is, again, part of that giant robot era where, you know, not only you had animated giant robot, but of course the Chojin of Japan, you know, where, you know, things like Super Sentai, aka better known as Power Rangers here in America, and Ultraman, and all those shows where you had, you know, teams that formed giant robots together. I can't say any better than that. They kept the color scheme simple, and I think that's what works with the design. I think it's so creative using the head in the lion's mouth, you know. And if you look at it really hard, I think, you know, something you don't really recognize is really, they kind of make a crown out of that head, you know. When you look, it looks like he has a crown, which, you know, sort of fits the fact that this is, he is the king of the robots. Which is, you know, why Voltron is the defender of the universe. He is the king of all robots, and he can defend. But again, as I was saying, I was sort of segueing into character design. And again, but the character design's very simple, very traditional, sort of Super Sentai Toujin type of heroes. You know, the heroes all have their basic color, and everything they wear is in that color. You know, Keith is red, so he wears a red suit. Pidge is green, so he has a green suit. Lance is blue. Seven's black. Hunk's yellow. Laura, of course, being a girl, wears pink. You know, we can't have a girl that doesn't wear pink. But, you know, unless you're Power Rangers, Jungle Fury, but that's besides the point. We're not getting there. but, you know, again, that very, you know, characters, they have very primary colors. Not all of them have primary colors, but, you know, are from primary colors and sort of the basic colors of the scheme. They're all very bright. Just to go down the character list, Keith, you know, when you look at his design, he's designed to be, you know, he has that sort of aura of leadership about him. You know, he has sort of the constitution of being in charge, if that makes any sense to anybody here. But, you know, in the sense of, like, you know, he seems like a leader, you know. It's not just, you know, what he does, as we'll get to later, but also his design. You know, he's not slouched over. He acts like a commander. You know, a lot of times he's in, I don't want to say salute formation, but he's in attention. You know, he's not like the other guys who are just relaxed. He's, you know, very strict. He's very aware of his surroundings. He seems very aware of his surroundings, or at least in the character design, that's things that they make available. Lance, you know, comes off as the fun-loving guy, and you can see it in his character design. Hunk, of course, the big, you know, Hunk and Pidge are very simple. You know, Pidge being a smaller, craftier guy, he's sort of small, and Hunk is, you know, being the big, strong man, is, you know, big. And then, of course, Princess Lore, being the beautiful princess, is very, very beautiful. And if Though I will say this. Can we have a definition on what her cup size is? Because, you know, up until a certain episode, I thought for sure she was a B-cop until they put her in a bikini. Let me just put it this way. The last time I saw a girl in a bikini that small, I was watching an anime I can't talk about on this network. let me just put it that way. Fan service, they had it. Then they'll have it forever. and I will get to that scene later. But, you know, she is the orange of, you know, beauty. And then, of course, with the villains, you know, Hagor and Lotor and Zarkon, you know, they're very, you know, being that they are the evil villains and very basic at that, you know, they do have the very basic, you know, they look like monsters. I mean, that's what they are. They are monsters, you know, very, you know, almost a vampiric appearance for Zarkon with the pointy ears and the crown and sort of the teeth, which, you know, same with, you know, I think you can pretty much say that that's pretty much where they took their influence when those characters were designed originally in Japan, was, you know, taking the idea from vampires and sort of monsters like that. I think it is important to keep in mind that part of the reason that these designs are so simple is, again, this is a show that is targeted at kids. I mean, in Japan, it may not just been targeted at kids, but with what World Events were doing, which I guess really has no say in it, because they didn't do character design, so just forget I even talked about that. Oh, man, it's been so long since I... Did I mention I'm happy to be able to do podcasting again? I haven't been able to do podcasting in, like, 4 months, so I'm happy to do podcasting again. So work with me getting back into the routine here. Let's move on to the Robius designs. I'm a huge Super Sentai fan, as I hopefully obviously proved. And I always love looking at the different designs of monsters. And with Voltron, it's no different. I love the Robius designs. You know, whatever the episode was about, you know, the design of the monster usually did fit what was trying to go on. Sometimes it was a bit weird and a stretch, like the Lion Tamer episode. You know, I almost expected him to have fur and that stuff. But, you know, the Robius, they look menacing. They look threatening, you know. You know, there were times like, oh, how is Voltron going to defeat this monster? That is until he forms Blazing Sword and does the slash and he goes like that. It's interesting to hear the villains talk about, this new Robius is stronger than ever, and, you know, we'll get into that when we talk into sort of the formula of each episode. Now let's talk about backgrounds. I love the backgrounds. Again, this, coming from sort of the mid-70s, or I should say mid to late 70s, this was, again, second generation of anime. And again, that, like, as some people will hear when I finally release, hopefully this weekend, my first episode of Mice and Giant Robots on the network, this was that first modern-day anime generation. And again, those very detailed backgrounds that pop out, it's watercolor backgrounds, but still, they have an ability to make those backgrounds pop out. And when I'm talking about backgrounds, I'm not just talking about necessarily, you know, things like mountains and that stuff, but I'm also talking about, like, the castle design. You know, it was very, I liked the fact that they had the new castle under the old castle, and the fact that it gave you a contrast. When you first get to the Castle of Lions, it's that old, crumbling ruins, and then by the end of that four-episode arc, you know, when new castle rises up from the ashes of the old one, very symbolic, and it fits what Voltron is, that very sleek-looking, futuristic castle. And pretty much all of the background, you know, from the different planets they went to the background, you know, the mountains and that stuff, they all kept it pretty basic. Again, following sort of the token formula, I just love looking at the backgrounds, because again, they're very beautiful to look at. They pop out. They're very realistic looking. And the fact of the matter is that it's not, they could have gone, you know, let's make it bright for the kiddies, but they, you know, kept it basic. And I can really appreciate that. With that, let's move on to story and acting. Overall, I have two different points here. Talk about the overall plot and talk about the formula of each episode. But really, these go hand in hand because the plot's pretty basic. You know, world event, pretty much good versus evil. Space explorers piloting a giant robot fighting against evil monsters. That's the plot. It doesn't need to be more than that, you know. I'm personally somebody who likes when a series keeps it simple. I like detailed and sort of deep plots. I have no problems with that. But a lot of times there are series out there that, you know, they get so caught up in, oh, we're doing a deep and dark plot, and there's twists and turns, that they sort of lose pace about what the story should be about. Which is why I usually appreciate simple series a whole lot more, because you know exactly what's going on. You know, it doesn't get lost in itself. But at the same point in time, the downside of that is that it can get pretty formulaic. And again, being this is the Tokujin series, you know, things like Super Sentai, it is that basic formula of, once you get past that starting arc, with those first four episodes, mind you, which are great episodes, you know, it does start to fall into a formula. You know, the episode starts with Zarkon, and at the beginning, Commander Yorick. Then when Lotor comes in with Prince Lotor and Hagar the Witch devising a plan to try to defeat Voltron, they come up with a powerful monster. They try to spring their plan in action. It disables somehow one of the Voltron Force members for a little bit, and they have to fight four or three lines to the new powerful Robeast, but somehow in the end, the disabled Voltron Force member is able to come back, and they form Voltron, and they defeat the Robeast. You know, I can't help but think of something a friend of mine, Michael Bailey, who does Views from the Long Box, said, you know, I think he said something along the lines of, like, he knows that Voltron is just there to defend, but, you know, things would be real simple if you just wait till, Zorak is sleeping, form Voltron, go up there, destroy Castle Doom, and everything will be over. Or something along those lines. I'm sorry, Mike. but it would... I guess it's pretty much the stands for anybody with common sense, but at the same time, again, being that this was kids, again, it follows that basic formula, and being that they want to be syndicated. You know, that is a downfall of the story in the sense that it does get very formulaic, which is okay for kids, because the kids don't want important or deep stories, but most kids are okay with formulaic stories, you know. I mean, look at things like He-Man. And there's a reason why shows like He-Man. Like, I mean, just look at the shows today. Johnny Test. Johnny Test was the same darn thing every darn episode. But kids still watch it. You know. But I digress, you know. And there's, you know, again, I talked about earlier how, you know, obviously this was cut up in places and how they copied and pasted a lot of stuff. You know, I remember I actually rented the, or at least I borrowed from somebody the season box set one so I could see, like, the extras. And, you know, they were talking about, you know, how a lot of times they had to, like, just one scene, they'd have to go and go to episode 20 to take a similar scene there and push in another episode because when they got that episode, that one scene was so screwed up that they had to do that. But at the same point in time, another thing, another criticism, mind you, I have for the story is that there are times where I feel like the people at World Event didn't know. It's as if they were starting to do, like, a very important episode, sort of like that iconic, I don't want to say, because it never did a drag episode, but, you know, you understand what I'm saying. You know, you had, you know, they were talking about something important, you know, it was a very serious issue, but then they remembered, hey, wait, we're a kid's show. Water it down. And it's like there are several episodes where they're talking about important things, and then all of a sudden it gets resolved a little too quickly for my taste, and it's as if that, you know, case for the day was just sort of forgotten. But other than those two things, again, it's very formulaic. But again, being that it is simple, it's very enjoyable to watch. Part of what makes it enjoyable to watch is the voice acting, which, again, it's just top notch. You know, again, as I said before, when you listen to me do the cast, it was obviously a who's who of, you know, 70s and 80s. Voice acting, you know, Jack Angel and Neil Ross and B.J. Ward and Michael Bell and Peter Cullen. I mean, God damn it, it's fucking Optimus Prime. For God's sakes. And which brings up something else I want to talk about. Excuse me. You know, Peter Cullen is the voice of Toonami. I mean, not only did he do the narrator for Voltron, but, you know, he did a lot of the promo, the classic promos we remember for Toonami. You know, I think when you think about it, her name's escaping me, but the lady who did the voice of Sarah, you had Steve Bloom, who did Tom, along with I'm trying to remember his name, and his name's escaping me, but he also does the voice of Lupin the Third. But him and Steve Blum as Tom, the lady who's the voice of Sarah, and then you have Peter Cullen, who was, you know, sort of did those promos for Toonami. And I find that very important because, again, that whole grandeur thing, it made us feel like we were being part of the adventure. And that's what made us love Toonami so much. And you can see here, not just in the narrator, but, you know, in his role as Cullen, you know, he acts as sort of the exposition guy. And again, I talked earlier about how, you know, they had very simple roles on that stuff. And part of that was, you know, the cast doing a great job of providing voices that fit those roles. Neil Ross sounded like a commanding officer, you know. And when he did Pidge, you know, he had a playful kid, playful innocence of him that, you know, fit Pidge very well. Michael Bell as Lance, you know, just a, or as I like to call Lance, the Raphael of the Voltron Force, because really, that's what he is. He's sort of that outlaw. Unfortunately, you don't hear much of Seven, but you get that, you know, he was really that second in command when he was there. B.J. Ward did a wonderful job as Prince Aurora. You know, there are times where, you know, first and foremost, she made her feel like, you know, she, you know, this was royalty. But at the same point in time, when there were points where Princess Aurora was, you know, coming down to Earth to be with, you know, sort of the other people of the Voltron Force, you know, there was also a down-to-Earth side of that voice she was doing that made you believe that this princess could be doing things like, you know, flying a flying lion, or for that matter, swimming in the pool with a bunch of soldiers and watching her top fly off. Which, again, I go back to that scene. The people complain about fan service. I'm trying to remember, I think it's, what scene is it? Not the invisible one. It's, it's in the 20s. I remember that. Basically, they all dive in. She comes out. She's wearing a itchy-titchy pink bathing suit. Again, all their bathing suits match. And it's that classic. She dives in and loses her tops. And, she just pops back up. And the shot is from her back, so you don't see anything. But obviously, the guys can see her bare chest, and Pidge goes, "Oh yeah, you have perfect form." At that point, I, you know, get in, I get my 10-point sign, and raise. Perfect 10! Thomas's prerogative number one. There's no such thing as too much fan service. But, I think the funny thing is, Hunk and, Lenny Wingrib as Hunk and Lothar, you know, they're two different voices, but again, shows his talent to be able to pull those off. You know, just, I think overall the point I'm getting at is the voice acting was just superb, and it really, if it wasn't for the voice acting, I don't think this series is as good as it is right now. You know, I think the voice acting definitely saved what was, I don't want to say a weak story, but a story that at times could seemingly get old quick. You know, as I was doing this, you know, marathon, which was, by the way, very hard to do because I'm actually a very big sports fan. I've been following the whole Penn State scandal thing very closely. And so, you know, I want to see what's going on with the Penn State, but, you know, what marathoning these episodes, 30 episodes in like only a couple days. And so there are times to where I'm watching it and it's the same thing over and over and I'm starting to fall asleep. But at the same point in time, what kept me up was the voice acting, which was just superb. So at the end of the day, if I had to give this a rating of out of a 1 to 5 scale, I think I'd give this 3 stars. And at the end of the day, this is a starter anime, but not for everybody. This is a starter anime for kids. Especially, you know, young boys. I think if somebody over, or for that matter, let me put it in this way. It's a great starter anime for anybody under the age of 14. I think once you're past that age, you know, because it can get a bit formulaic, it can bore you real quick. But none of that should take away from the fact this is an iconic series, and it is such a joy to watch, you know, and I'll gladly, you know, as a fan of animation, I will gladly watch it again. Because, again, it's not just the fact that it's iconic. It's also a piece of animation history. It was a key part of the 80s animation, along with things like He-Man and Transformers and Thundercats, that, you know, really started to help revitalize American animation. So, even though animation was done in Japan, you know, it was part of what led sort of that, you know, combination of animation being done both in America and in Japan and that type of thing. So that's my review of Voltron, Defenders of the Universe. Hope you enjoyed it. I'll give you a clue of next episode. Well, let's just say you better get your dark sunglasses and your Men in Black looking suits ready, because we're going on tour with 3 Houston voice actors. More on that when we do the review next week, which I actually hope to get out next Monday. So that's it. Remember to please leave a comment on the site. Do not have an email. Hope to have that up soon by the next episode for you guys. At the same time, also keep on the lookout. This is usually the point to where I pimp all my friends, as I say. I don't have the links up on the site, but so keep out a look for, you know, friends of the site. The links to be up soon as well. So that's it for this first golden episode of Tom's Prerogative. Until next time, Matsunami faithful, stay golden.
Accursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.